The update is that the IOM, the UN International Organization for Migration, says that the first barge bringing returnees from Renk is expected to arrive in Malakal this morning. Now, to tell us more about this exciting news and other actions the United Nations and other humanitarian actors are taking to assist the people in need who sought refuge in South Sudan, I'm joined by the UN Acting Humanitarian Coordinator, who is also the IOM Country Director, Peter Van de Auerat. Well, welcome. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me on the show.
It's always a pleasure having you here at Miraya Breakfast Show. So, what is the latest?
Well, let me maybe start with the figures. So, we have officially about 57,000 people that have arrived in South Sudan from the conflict in Sudan. The vast majority, more than 53,000, are actually South Sudanese returnees. When you look at where these people are arriving, most of them are still arriving in Upper Nile, and specifically Renk. 47,000 are there. We're also seeing an increase in arriving in arrivals in Northern Bahr al-Ghazal and in Unity State. Our focus, together with the government and specifically the Minister of Humanitarian Affairs and the RRC and their teams, is to, on the one hand, as it has been from the beginning, to provide humanitarian assistance upon arrival to the people that need it, and to try and move people onwards to their final destinations as quickly as possible. And the story that you refer to is part of this second effort. And I was very excited to see over the weekend, actually it started on Friday, that a voucher system which was established so that people could actually buy a ticket on commercial barges going from Renk to Malakal has started to work, and we're starting to see hundreds of people every day moving away from Renk. Now, that is a good development. At the same time, we will have to increase the number of people that can depart from Renk, because at the same time, as people are departing, we have new people coming in. And so we're looking at around 1,500 arrivals every day. So unless you manage to move 1,500 people away from Renk, the number of people in Renk will continue to increase.
So that's increase,
the,
yes.
Yeah, so that's the challenge we face. The next challenge then becomes when people arrive in Malakal. In Malakal specifically, there are two separate challenges. On the one hand, you have people that are returning who want to stay in Malakal. The question is, where will they establish themselves? The POC Malakal is not an option because the POC is already overcrowded, so people need to establish themselves somewhere in Malakal town. The second challenge then is, what do we do with the people that are in transit, who arrive in Malakal from Renk but who do not want to stay in Malakal? And so the UN, UNHCR, IOM and partners are supporting the local authorities with setting up a transit center where people can then temporarily stay until they move onwards to their final destination. Again, the challenge there will be, will we be able to match the number supporting the number of people to depart from the transit center with the number of people arriving in Malakal to avoid that there is a large increase of people that get stuck in Malakal? I'm a little bit concerned about that because we, as you know, we are getting close to the rainy season. Once the rainy season is in full force, it becomes increasingly difficult to move people, especially those people that require to go somewhere by road. So that's sort of in a nutshell, I think, where we are today.
Oh, wow. And looking at the fact that South Sudan was already in a humanitarian crisis, and now you have all these returnees and refugees coming back in, what are your thoughts around this?
Well, I think that maybe actually my biggest worry as UN humanitarian coordinator is not necessarily the returnees. I mean, I think that yes, that, you know, we're going through a difficult phase. Yes, you know, we will face challenges. As I mentioned, you know, how do you make people move? How do you avoid that we have overcrowding in Renk, these type of things? But I think if we take a step back, I think the biggest challenge that I see, and that affects all South Sudanese, is the economic impact that we already see playing out of the Sudan crisis, and specifically on the prices of basic commodities. When I listen to my teams, you know, based in the states bordering Sudan, you're looking at some of the basic food products going up 70%, 80%, 90% in price. In certain areas, fuel costs are skyrocketing. Now, that is something that I am worried about, because if you think about the fact that before the Sudan crisis, before these prices were increasing, we already had more than 9 million people that were considered to be in need of humanitarian assistance one way or another. So, which is an indication that the population was already highly vulnerable before this happened. Now, if basic commodities, if those prices keep on rising, or even if they stay at the level where they are today, which essentially means sometimes doubling of the price from a few weeks ago, how are people going to cope? And I think that's really something that I don't want to underplay the challenges related to the returnees, but I think these challenges are manageable. The other challenge that will require a huge effort, how do we assist people with having access to basic commodities that have essentially doubled in price, especially against the background where our humanitarian response plan has been funded only for about 25% so far. So that means that 75% of the funding required, and that was the humanitarian response plan done before the Sudan crisis. So it will be extremely important, I think, for both the national government and the international partners to sit together and say, okay, how can we support the population as a whole in the context of these rapidly rising prices? And for me, that is the, you know, if there's anything that I sometimes lie awake with at night, it's that part. And the returnees we will manage. I mean, there will be issues, you will see, there will people get stuck, and it will not always be smooth sailing, but I'm not so concerned about that. But that's really the and it's less visible. I realize that. It's less visible than the returnees, but that is really a big challenge, I think, that we're going to face collectively as a country in the next week and months.
I mean, indeed, we did hear from a commissioner in Melut. I don't know if you already have an update on this, but he already fears that because of the depleting resources, the community there will actually be in need of humanitarian aid in the near future. And aside from the returnees fleeing Sudan, we also have Kajokeji, where the refugees from the other side of Uganda are leaving because of ration cuts that side as well. And in this case, what would you see as the immediate response? Because talking and planning takes time. What could be the immediate response? Because then the situation is really dire.
So, well, the immediate response, and that is, I think, already happening, is to rapidly increase your humanitarian assistance to those communities that are highly vulnerable. Now, that is the very short-term response, and we can do that. But of course, just to explain how that works, if you have a certain pot of money for humanitarian assistance, let's say that would last you for 3 or 4 months, you can increase the spending today, but that means that the period for which you have humanitarian assistance is going to decrease if your overall amount of money doesn't increase. So I think that the short-term solution, no question, is to increase humanitarian assistance where we can and as quickly as we can, and the UN and its partners are certainly doing that, and of course also for the government to see how can they quickly raise maybe or allocate funds to providing support to their local population. But we will have to, while I understand that talking and planning alone is not going to bring literally food on the table in the very short term, we will have to sit together collectively and say, okay, this is a really big challenge. How are we going to face this? And that will require the full engagement of the government, the full engagement of the national partner, of the international partners, to come up with a plan on how we're going to deal with this.
Okay. And lastly, I want to look at the fact that previously from last year, the trend has been moving towards looking at development rather than humanitarian aid, looking towards development as you try to phase off this humanitarian era in South Sudan. Do you think that this is going to set that plan back?
Well, that is something I am concerned about, in the sense that we were making progress in terms of shifting, you know, from humanitarian funding to development funding, which is also something that the government, rightly so, would like to see happening. I think for the time being, I think there is, we will continue to try and do that, but the risk is that this move towards development will be overtaken by a spike in humanitarian assistance, by a spike in humanitarian needs for the reasons I just described. And so that, again, we will be, in a way, dragged into focusing mostly on humanitarian assistance simply because the situation is deteriorating fast. So that is something that we will have to monitor, because at the end of the day, if you think about it, the fact that South Sudan today is very vulnerable to the shocks, to a shock like the crisis in Sudan, is in itself a very, very, very strong argument that you need to invest in development, because humanitarian assistance is not going to make you less vulnerable to these type of shocks. For example, unless South Sudan really is able to produce enough food for itself, it will remain vulnerable for something that happens in the neighboring country. If today South Sudan would have developed to the point where the country would be producing its own food, well, we wouldn't be seeing these type of price rises, price increases, or maybe sometimes absence of certain products, because you rely for those products on the importation from Sudan. So I think the whole situation now and the vulnerability that you see and is a very strong argument to say we need to continue on this path towards development, because it's the only way to reduce the vulnerability of South Sudan to crisis in the region, to climate shocks, and even to internal shocks. So I think that is really, I'm really hoping and certainly will be continuing to advocate that while we increase humanitarian assistance, let's not forget the development work, because it's the only path towards really creating a resilient country.
Okay. And now, what is your message to the government authorities, especially as you partner with them to reduce the suffering of these people?
Well, I mean, I think my first message is a message of respect and gratitude for the action that the Minister of Humanitarian Affairs and his team and all the ministries involved have taken. They really have stepped up, and I think also, as I mentioned, I think in earlier interviews, the fact that they are keeping the borders open so that people can flee the conflict, independent of the nationality that they have, I think is something that is extremely commendable. Going forward, it will be very important, I think, that the national authorities continue and where possible, increase the resources that they are putting into this, into both the response when it comes to the returnees, but also the topic that we've been talking about, when it comes to assisting the population in having access to the basic commodities that they need to survive.
All right. And to the people, and hopefully refugees and returnees listening in.
Well, to the people, I think we should collectively brace ourselves for a difficult period ahead. But you know, I can really commit the UN and its partners to we will be there to support you as good as we can. And really try to avoid conflict and we need lasting peace, because if we have more violence now in the context of, you know, the context that we're describing here, it's really going to get too much in terms of for all of us to deal with this. So a message of brace yourself, it's going to be a difficult period, but we will be there together with the government to support you.
All right. Is there anything you would like to add?
No, I have said everything. I think just to let us sit together with the different partners and the government to look at what can we do to support people now in the context of these rising prices of basic commodities. I think let's keep focusing on that, and let's keep focusing on developing and bringing the country forward.
Thank you very much for making the time to come and speak to me today.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Yes, that is the IOM country director, who is currently UN Acting Humanitarian Coordinator, Peter van der Raat. They're updating us on what the UN and other international organizations are doing to support the returnees and refugees. We have information that there are barges that will bring returnees from Renk to Malakal this morning, and there's hope to provide more opportunities for even more people to travel on this path, as these barges can only accommodate about 1,500 at a time.